Alaskans live in a world of snow, and the winter of 2023-24 is shaping up to be an epic one. With a record amount of snow comes lots of interest in recreating in the mountains, skiing, snow machining, snowshoeing, and more. To help people make good decisions in avalanche terrain, the Tugatch National Forest Service's Tugatch Avalanche Center, Tugatch State Park, and friends of the Tugatch Avalanche Center hired additional avalanche forecasters. They joined me, your host Paul Torta, to discuss what is new with their forecasts and outlooks. Joining me is Wendy Widener, director of the Tugatch Avalanche Center, Mary Giamatti, Tugatch Front Range forecaster, Mitt Dalps, Seward Area forecaster, and Daniel Kruger, also a Seward Area forecaster. On the second half of the show, AP faculty Ann St. Clair discusses her research on how people are using avalanche forecasts. Stay tuned for Outdoor Sport. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordock, and we are talking about what's new in avalanche forecasting, because there's been some significant changes here in South Central Alaska. Joining us on Zoom is the director of the Tugatch Avalanche Center, Wendy Widener, Mary Giamatti, Mitt Dalps, and Daniel Kruger. And here in the studio with me is APU faculty and AVI researcher Ann St. Clair. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thanks, Paul.
Great. Wendy, let's start with you. Boy, there's been some growth in the forecasting capabilities here in South Central. So talk to us about that. What's new and why the changes and how they came about?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having us on Outdoor Explorer. It's exciting, and it is really exciting to be talking about growth for the Tugatch Avalanche Center. And just so folks know, the Avalanche Center last year was staffed with three people out of the Girdwood Ranger Station office, and we forecast for Turnian Pass, myself, Andrew Schauer, and John Sykes. And we work closely and in partnership with the Friends of the Tugatch Avalanche Center, which is our nonprofit arm. So the Avalanche Center is funded both by the U.S. Forest Service and probably many listeners to Outdoor Explorer through our nonprofit friends group. So last winter, a bunch of changes happened, and we're seeing the fruits of those changes this year. And I'll start with the Tugatch State Park. The friends group, speaking on behalf of the friends group, they were able to complete an agreement with the state park, Alaska State Parks, to hire an avalanche specialist that would monitor avalanche conditions for Anchorage's Front Range. This is something the Friends Group has wanted to do and has been in their mission for 20 years now. So it's really exciting that this partnership was able to blossom. And for listeners, so they know, 100% of the funds going to this position for gear and salary and everything is coming from the nonprofit group. And then the Tugatch State Park is providing the agency that's overseeing it. So it's kind of a little complicated, but the individual is a Tugatch State Park employee. The funds are just coming from the nonprofit side. And on the Forest Service side, where I work, it's actually similar. The Friends Group provides funding for salary for Forest Service employees, and then we operate as Forest Service employees. So jumping down to the Kenai Peninsula, I don't know. There's been, in the last 10 years, most of the avalanche accidents have been on the Seward Ranger District. And this is south of Turnian Pass in a place that's often called Summit Lake, Snug Harbor, Lost Lake. And because of all the incidents that have occurred in the near future, the Seward Ranger District decided to make a commitment to public safety for the recreators on forest lands down there. And they were able to get two new avalanche specialist positions approved. So this all happened at the same time, where the Seward Ranger District was able to hire two new forecasters, and the Friends Group in the Chugach State Park was able to hire an avalanche specialist for the Front Range. And everything is kind of tied to the Friends Group here. So maybe I made a short story a little bit long, but we have three new avalanche specialists for the Anchorage area and south to Seward, which is exciting. And I will let them talk about more of the story.
Well, that, but when I do have a question. That sounds complicated to me a little bit. Like you have the Chugach Ranger District, which is based out of Clearwood. You have the Seward Ranger District, based out of Seward, and you have another entity, Chugach State Park. But that all came together. It sounds like a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It's come together thanks to the nonprofit Friends Group that's really overseeing a lot of this. And there are agreements in place between the Forest Service and the Chugach State Park and the Friends Group. So everything is operating as it should. And it's really a little bit of an interagency situation now called the Chugach Avalanche Center. And this is a first step into continuing the growth, but it's pretty amazing to have this much change in one season. And yes, it's a lot of work, but we take it on gladly, and we're just excited for all the support.
Yeah, and I'd like to add that also there's the Hatcher Pass Avalanche Center that also it's all there. Like if you go to the your guys' website, which we'll have a link on the Outdoor Explorer website to it, you can access the Hatcher Pass information. It's amazing how far this has come.
Yes, absolutely. And we work closely with the Hatcher Pass folks, 100%.
Yep. So great. Thanks, Wendy. That was Wendy Wenner, the director of the Chugach Avalanche Center. Let's go to the Front Range of the Chugach. Mary Giannotti, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Mary, tell us a bit about yourself, your background. Let's start with that.
Yeah. My name's Mary. I grew up in Juneau in Southeast Alaska. And then I went to school on the East Coast and studied earth science with an environmental science minor. And then after that, I started off actually in some glaciology research. I worked for a glaciology research nonprofit, and then kind of realized I really liked teaching. And so I worked for NOLS for a pretty long time and then started working for the Avalanche School. And then after that, did a little guiding on Denali. And did some park ranger patrols up there, and then Hatcher Pass ended up getting a little bit of extra money to have a pro observer, and so I wrote pro obs for them, and then I went down to Skagway and got some forecasting experience and an entry-level position down there, and then when this job opened up, I got pretty excited, because it combines science and recreation and teaching, and you kind of get a cool mix of field time, hands-on work, and you also have a lot of space for art and creativity and how you explain what's happening and what's going on. And so far I really like it. I really like my team, and I'm excited for this first big step.
So, wow, you just said something. Art and creativity. I never put that and avalanche work together. What do you mean by that? Where does art and creativity come in?
I think kind of in the void between what you're trying to portray to the general public and kind of the science behind that, and like making that all come together. There's pictures, there's diagrams, there's videos. You're kind of balancing like, oh, I want to tell this narrative and this story, and how am I going to do it in a productive way that's going to reach a lot of different people who might have pretty busy lives or a lot of stuff going on in the background where they don't have the time to really get their nose in the snow. And so how can I like deliver a message to them in a really efficient way? And there's tons of creativity there, which is what makes it fun and interesting.
Now, and we'll come back to that in the second half of the show with Ann and her research on how people use forecasts. So you came with a lot of background. You saw a lot of different snowpacks. NOLS, and for those listeners who aren't familiar, that's it used to be called the National Outdoor Leadership School. They have schools from all over the world. So you came with a bunch of experience from different snowpacks to the Chugach, correct?
I did, yeah. I've lived up in South Central now for probably 6 or 7 years. And so I got used to it's a great place to learn and gain experience because between Hatcher Pass and the Front Range and then down in Turnagain, there's a lot of different, there's three different snowpacks there. And then I taught a bunch of remote courses for the Avalanche School. I taught a course in Nome and a course in Sitka. And that was kind of fun to just see different parts of the state. And then I spent a fair amount of time down in Teton Valley, and it was really cool to see their avalanche stuff down there through working winter courses for NOLS. And then I mostly worked in the NOLS winter and mountaineering program, so you also use a lot of those skills when you're mountaineering to just assess different snowpacks that way too.
Yeah. So, Mary, what's your there's been talk about forecasting in the Front Range for a long time. So what's your day look like? It's a big area. So how do you manage that?
Yeah. So far this week I've had – or this year I've had 2 field days a week where I go out and collect data. And I've tried to get a mix of either spots that don't have a lot of data – and then I have a couple spots that are my go-to spots to just monitor trends and see what's going on there. And I try to get a mix of lower elevations and higher elevations to just see what's going on at different elevation bands. And then other than that, I'm monitoring the weather stations every day. Doing some outreach stuff. We're going to have a free beacon clinic coming up pretty soon. I'm going to be helping out with that. And then writing up reports. I think between all of that, that ends up being a fair amount of stuff to balance.
It sounds like a lot. And well, let's go back to the free beacon. When's that?
That is on the 27th. It's at the Glen Alps parking lot. It's going to be 10:30 to 3:30. And on the hour, every hour, there's going to be guided beacon practice. But you can show up at any time if you just want to show up and practice different skills.
Sounds like fun. Maybe I'll show up.
Yeah.
People have to register for that, Mary?
They decided they do not have to register.
Good. And what are you, Mary, what are you producing then for the public?
Sure. Great question. So I write 2 observations a week, and I post those on our observation platform. And then every Friday, I write a weekend outlook. It comes out around 4 or 5 p.m. That gives an idea about what's happening over the weekend. And that's kind of focused in on Saturday and Sunday. And it summarizes the weather trends throughout the week, what happened, what is forecasted to happen. And then it summarizes up to 3 of the main avalanche problems in the area.
Uh-huh. And what's the zone? You talked about 2 spots you went to, but what's your area that you're covering?
Great question. Right now I'm really focusing on high use areas, so Peak 3, Glen Alps, South Fork of Eagle River, and then I think as the season goes on I'll expand a little bit more, but I was trying to hit spots that get a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
And focus on that.
And what are some of your challenges? Still a variety of weather and a variety of terrain in there.
Well, I think you nailed it. There's a ton of spatial variability, and it's a pretty massive range all the way from down on the Turnagain Highway, Seward Highway, all the way up to South Fork of Eagle River. And so that's just a lot of space to cover for one person. So I think that's kind of felt like a bit of a challenge. It's an area that's getting a lot of attention now. And so I'm sure there's pieces of unconsciously incompetent or things that I just don't know yet that I'm learning since it's new.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a big learning curve for sure. This is Alaska Public Media, an outdoor explorer. I'm your host, Paul Torda. We're talking about what's new in avalanche forecasting in South Central Alaska. Wendy, let's come back to you for a minute. What's the difference between what Mary's doing and what happens at Turnagain?
Well, that's a good distinction. Turnagain Pass for about 15 years now has had a daily avalanche forecast. So every morning at 7 a.m., you can get it. Go to chugachavalanche.org and see what the avalanche danger is. But that's a pretty, that's Girdwood, Turnagain Pass only. That's a small area. And so what Mary is doing is putting out an avalanche outlook, which is very similar to a forecast, but doesn't have a danger rating, but gives, is really trying to give that golden nugget as to what we should look for if we're headed out over the weekend, what kind of avalanches happened the week before, things like that. And I'll let Mick and Daniel talk about their products, but it's quite similar. And it's common for when avalanche centers grow, when there's new areas, to produce products like this. If there's not the resources to do 7 days a week, in order to do 7 days a week, you would need 3 full-time Marys to do that for the Front Range.
Yeah.
And we're not quite there yet, but maybe in the near future. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, it's really incredible how much when you're going to the Front Range, those parking lots are full and getting fuller, it seems, by every year. So let's go down south. So Mick Thalps and Daniel Kruger are the new forecasters based out of Moose Pass and Seward. So welcome, Mick and Daniel. Let's see. Why don't we start with Mick? Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mick, your background. How you got into this?
Yeah, I was raised in Minnesota and made my way to Colorado for college, studied environmental studies and geography, and quickly found that I really like to ski. So went back and forth from living in ski towns and finishing my education, and then became a ski patroller, and I worked at Arapahoe Basin.
Oh, fun.
Made my way to Alaska and ski patrolled at Alyeska for a number of years. Worked with an avalanche dog there, so I had my coworker Zuka with me on the chairlift. I also, like Mary, found that I really enjoyed education. So along the way, I started working for the Outward Bound School in the summer, and I taught sea kayaking and mountaineering in Seward. And I also have been teaching for the Alaska Avalanche School for about the last 8 years. I teach recreational level one avalanche classes and rescue courses. And then for the last 8 years, I've been a park ranger. So I worked at Kenai Fjords, and then for the last 4 years as a mountaineering ranger at Denali.
Well, and now I recall you were on this show before because I did a show, and I think I had you and your dog, I believe. But anyways, little side note. And Daniel, what about you? What about your background and how you got into this?
Yeah. So I grew up in Georgia and there was no snow, and I graduated with a degree in geology, and, in school, I began to realize how much I also like teaching. And so I moved to Montana, where I started getting into, snowboarding and backcountry, snowboarding. And I started working at a ski resort, teaching snowboarding to a small nonprofit, and fell in love with getting people excited about getting outside and recreating in the outdoors. And that's where my career brought me to Alyeska in the winter. I originally moved to Alaska in 2016, and me and my partner bought a house in Moose Pass. And so I've been in Moose Pass for 9 years now. And between a summer position with the Forest Service and the Seward Ranger District and working at Alyeska in the winter, it seemed like Moose Pass was a really amazing fit. And so I still work for the Forest Service in the summer. But as my winter career began to develop, I started getting more into backcountry, much more backcountry professional career development. I started working my way up with avalanche qualification certs, and accepted a position in Japan as a backcountry guide. That introduced me to forecasting and working in that more winter professional industry. And then I started working at the Avalanche School here in Alaska, which was a great way for me to start teaching people the science of snow, which I find very interesting. And then I ended up meeting someone in Japan who helped me get a position in Skagway, the similar position, same position that Mary had. And I started forecasting there for DOT and for the White Pass Railroad during the spring for the last 2 years. And it kind of bounced around a little bit, but allowed me to find a passion with learning about the snowpack in Summit and Seward and considering this place home. So it was a great fit to find a place and work with a team like this in my backyard.
And I am I correct in saying that connection is Bill Glued?
It is, yeah. He is a sensei, and he has been a big force in avalanche education and awareness in Alaska for, oh man, probably decades.
Yeah, I think we definitely have to recognize people like Bill and Joe Fredson and Doug Fessler. Doug was probably the original forecaster that did a lot up in the Front Range, and is still living right in the middle of it. So those guys and gals have done a tremendous amount to move this forward. So Mick and Daniel, talk to us about what your day looks like, what you're doing up there, where you're going. It's a big area.
So we spend our time, we have two zones. And we provide an outlook for each of these zones on Fridays, just like Mary does. And the outlook is for the weekend. So it's a 2-day forecast, which is pretty different than the daily. And the Summit Lake zone on the Kenai extends from the Y on the southern border, where the Sterling and the Seward highways join, to Hope on the northern end. And then the Seward zone is basically the terrain between Lost Lake and Snug Harbor. So our days have, we kind of jump back and forth between zones. We both want to be really familiar, and we both write the outlooks for each zone. And so we have been ski touring in the Summit zone, and in the Seward zone, it is, there's a lot of motorized users. And so we have been spending quite a few of our days on snow machines and accessing from Lost Lake and Snug Harbor, Primrose and Snow River are kind of the main access points for Seward. And our days look really similar to what Mary described, and our weeks, two field days usually, where we're looking at the current conditions, just looking around, have there been avalanches? What's happening with the weather? What are the surface conditions of the snow? What is the next storm going to fall on top of? And then the snowpack, what is in there? Where are the weak layers? Are there weak layers? Where are they located? And we perform stability tests to try to figure out how likely the avalanches are going to be. And like Mary talked about, it's very spatially variable. So one snow pit gives us only so much information. And then we try to project that to the whole region.
Dan, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I guess the only other thing to add is we have been in these outlooks. I don't know if it's working, but we're trying to encourage the public to submit observations. And every now and again, we don't get much. But sometimes, and I feel like more recently, we've been getting a lot of people that come out and recreate and are posting obs, and then me and Mary get the opportunity to communicate with them and get to know them so that we are actually building this like relationship with the people that are recreating. And we want to build on that with our outreaches. But that's been a really great thing is I feel like we're getting a lot of excited feedback with mine and Mick's presence being out here.
In the Lost Lake, Mick, you mentioned that's a snow machine territory, which is my understanding. Are you up there on machines, or how are you accessing that zone?
Yeah, we are. We were up at Lost Lake last week, and we'll be at Snug Harbor this week. So it's been great to get up. You know, that area is difficult to access. It's a big area, and so it's been pretty amazing to be able to see how far you can go on the snow machines. And as primarily I have been a backcountry user as a ski touring. So this has been a really amazing part of the job to be able to access these areas in a different way.
And how much time do you spend digging out snow machines?
How much time do we spend taking them out?
Digging out snow machines. That's my experience with snow machines. You spend a little time digging out snow machines.
Oh, digging them out. Digging them out, yes. Yes, quite a bit of time. But you learn techniques to prevent that and then to get yourself out faster, and you bring a lot of friends.
Oh, good, good, good. And then what are you producing as far as the report goes?
Very similar to what Mary and Wendy had mentioned, our weekend outlook, and like Mick had mentioned, our weekend outlook basically categorized in a streamlined way. It starts with weather. Well, it starts with the bottom line, which is a really easy, digestible way for people to understand what how we can inform them and what our concerns are. But then it moves down into weather, and that can kind of paint a picture about what our avalanche hazards are. And like Mary had said, we may have 1 to 3 avalanche hazards so that people can understand what they might want to be looking out for. And then kind of slap dab in the middle is a special announcements where we sometimes don't post much at all. We might post when different motorized areas are being opened, different public events. And soon we'd like to start publishing or start having outreaches on there for the different communities around here, like Moose Pass and Seward and Cooper Landing, and maybe even into Soldotna and Homer, because we actually run into people in Summit that recreate that far. Yeah. And this is the closest area they get to enjoy playing in the snow.
Yeah. And the different areas, are you distinguishing, like when you do your forecast, you're saying, well, there's one for Summit, one for Lost Lake?
Yes. So on the ChugachAvalanche.org website, you can, under the forecast tab, you can choose the Summit zone and the Seward zone and the Chugach State Park.
Okay.
So it's a separate tab, yeah.
Okay. And are you using the danger rating?
No, we don't use the danger rating for Summit and Seward. We use avalanche problems to describe the character of avalanches that people might encounter. And those can change on a daily basis. So that's kind of one of the challenges of writing a forecast for the weekend, because the weather might change dramatically from one day to the next. So that's been another one of the creativities that I found in this job, like Mary was saying, is how to describe what's going to happen on Saturday versus Sunday.
Yeah, and are you to also, like Mary, just put in a report out on Friday? Like, when does yours come out? How often do they come out?
Ours comes out on Friday by 5.
5 p.m. or 5 a.m.?
Yes.
Okay, you have avalanche people or morning people, I think. So I just wanted to clarify what time of the day it is. Yeah.
Yes.
Great. Wendy, I did have one question for you. Why does the, and we just have a minute here to do this before our break, the danger rating, why turn it in and not necessarily using it for Seward or the Chugach?
Great question. And that's because in order to assign a danger rating, a color, it's actually quite difficult, and you need to really know what's happening. And with the weekend outlook, we're calling it a weekend outlook. And it's to give those nuggets to people, but there's a lot more uncertainty with the weekend outlook, but these folks can still write, we think this might happen. If this much snow happens, then the avalanche conditions will get more dangerous, kind of language like that. But to actually assign a color or danger rating, you need a lot more confidence in what's happening with the snow and the weather and the snowpack. So hopefully that kind of answers that for the listeners.
Yep. Perfect. We will come back to that after a quick break. This is Alaska Public Media. You're listening to The Outdoor Explorer.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Twardot. We are talking about what's new in avalanche forecasting in South Central Alaska. I've got some great people with me. Wendy Wagner is the director of the Avalanche Center, Tugats Avalanche Center. Mary Giannanti is the new forecaster for the Front Range of the Tugats. Mitt Phelps and Daniel Kruger are forecasting down out of Seward and Moose Pass. So, Daniel, during the break, we talked a bit about sort of different kind of snowpacks. You want to sort of recap that and like how you think people might be using these forecasts?
Yeah, Paul. So one thing that one reason that we're able and excited about forecasting for all these different areas is because the snowpack is very different. And sometimes whatever hazards or problems we might have in one area might be different than the other. And for people that maybe live and recreate in Seward, they might not have as much interest in even reading some of the forecasts or thinking that the forecasts in Turnagain Pass might be as specific to where they were recreating. And by having all these different products now and these different weekend outlooks, it'll be a little bit more specific to the areas they like to travel with hopes of them making the process of reading these weekend outlooks a part of their weekend routines or daily routines so that it'll be more influential in their decision-making because it's happening around where they like to play.
Excellent. Wendy, we also talked about different user groups. So who uses these forecasts and what can the general public get out of them?
Yeah, well, pretty much 50-50 or maybe a little more than 50% snow machiners are on the Kenai and Turnagain Pass and human powered. We don't have perfect numbers on that, but it's definitely the majority of the backcountry travel in the winter is happening with backcountry skiers, split boarders, or snow machiners. Sometimes there's some folks going to cabins or hunters, but those are the non-motorized and the motorized communities are the main communities, and those are the target audience, definitely. And accidents happen to all those user groups. Not one isn't more susceptible than the other. It happens to skiers, snowboarders, and snow machiners equally. So we really try and target our information to those high-use areas and the problem areas.
And I'm always impressed how much coordination there is in the avalanche snow science community with the railroad, the power line, DOT. There seems like there's a lot of that also, correct?
Oh, yes. There are a lot of avalanche professionals in the Girdwood and Seward Highway corridor from very different organizations. Absolutely.
Yeah, not to mention Alyeska, the ski resort also. So
guiding operations.
Right.
Yep, it's a little bit of a hub.
We live in a snow world, especially this winter. What a fantastic winter. So Ann St. Clair is in the studio with me, sitting over very quietly, collecting her thoughts. So Ann, introduce yourselves to us.
Yeah, well, thanks, Paul, for bringing me into this conversation. I grew up also on the East Coast, so I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but I got hooked on the skiing lifestyle by skiing with family, cousins, aunts, uncles in New Hampshire. And initially, I went to university and studied anthropology and sociology, and I was really interested in the question of how do people understand their environments. But I wasn't really sure where I was going to apply that question, but I knew I needed to get to the mountains to at least get started. So I moved to Colorado, and I worked between Colorado and Utah for a bit over a decade, mainly as a full-time mountain bike guide, and then doing kind of my own backcountry skiing, which then merged into taking avalanche courses and starting to work in the guiding industries and education industries within avalanche education. And in doing so, I started to see the possibility and kind of the open canvas for social science to contribute within this industry in terms of how we can understand how well products work for people. And I wanted to take it one step further. So I was able to attend a research program and a master's degree program in Canada, Simon Fraser University. And I worked with Dr. Pascal Hagley and his team to study how people use the avalanche forecast in Canada. So I did a master's degree there and graduated in 2020. I was able to get a forecasting job with Avalanche Canada for 3 years before moving here to Alaska to teach with APU. And I'm currently still working with that avalanche research program at SFU as a PhD student. And I just think it's really fun how connected the Anchorage community is to that program, because fellow forecaster John Sykes is also doing a PhD with the program, and APU faculty member Ava Latisuo. So it's just a really fun and highly intelligent community up here. Yeah.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
And motivated also.
Yeah.
Yeah. We love our snow up here. So, and talk to us about, let's focus on your master's research and what that's about. And my understanding, it's about sort of how the public uses forecasts.
Yeah, yeah. And so as a research program, we focus on really working with our industry partners to do applied science as much as possible. So I was working with the organization Avalanche Canada, and they issue the forecasts that are accessible to the public in Canada. But a lot of the products are the same here in North America. So we share the North American Avalanche Danger Scale that the audience here might be familiar with. We also use the same avalanche problem types. And we include similar products like descriptions of the weather, descriptions of the avalanche activity, and descriptions of the snow. So in this research project, we wanted to help Avalanche Canada try to understand how well their forecast product and design was working for the public, and if there were ways that we could improve it based on the evidence of what people are actually doing with it.
Okay. And how that talk to me a little about your methodology, about like where that how that sort of manifested itself in your study.
Yeah, this was a really fun part for me, was thinking about how do we get to the essence of what people are actually doing. And so to approach this, we used qualitative interviews. It was such a fun exercise. I sat down with a colleague of mine. We worked together on this. We conducted 46 individual interviews with people from all over the Lower Mainland. So we interviewed in Vancouver, Squamish, and Whistler. We sat down with snowmobilers, snowshoers, ice climbers, and skiers. We were sure to include a full range of like age diversity, gender diversity, and folks that had never seen the products before and were just getting started, and folks that are really committed in their activities. So, and then the interview itself was really strategically designed. So it had several parts to it. And initially, we just asked people about their process but when they were planning to go into the backcountry and what that looked like. And we didn't actually mention the avalanche forecast until later in the interview, so we could see if they themselves brought it up as something useful. But then we actually had the website pulled up, and we would go through it with them. They would tell us what they read, what they click, what they find confusing. And then we had a few application exercises where we had a mock bulletin exercise for the day and this 3D mountain model with some different travel routes drawn on it. And we then asked people how they would use the information for this given scenario. And so from coding, first transcribing and then coding all of these interviews, my task in the analysis portion was to go through all 46 and looked for different patterns in how the overall forecast was being applied to this planning process, which was really cool. And ultimately, to summarize the results, we found that there was, in this study, in this region and at this time, with the Avalanche Canada product, we found that there was five different types of users. And to make it easy for me, I labeled them A, B, C, D, E, these different types. So I gave them a little moniker to try and make it straightforward. So the type A user is absent. So they're not using the forecast. And for a variety of different reasons, some people thought that it didn't really apply to their activity type or what they were doing out there. And some people just didn't know that it existed at all. And then when we get to type B and C, here they are going to the avalanche forecast, but they're mainly looking just at the danger rating to help them determine where to go or if to go. So a type B user is making their decision based on the danger rating to go into the backcountry or not on that day or that weekend. So they might want to go snowshoeing, and if they see that the danger is considerable or high, they might just choose a different weekend or wait for a different weekend. The type C user is actually considering the terrain for their trip. So if they see a considerable or high danger rating, then they are going to pick a trip where they're not going into avalanche terrain. If it's considerable or high, they still might go out, but they know to go into areas that are low angle and not exposed to steeper terrain. And then for our type D users, this is the first category in the typology that's utilizing the avalanche problem types. So they're using a more comprehensive approach to look at where the problem is located in the terrain, and they're trying to avoid the avalanche hazard specifically. But they're really not confident with making that assessment out in the environment. So they're relying more heavily on the avalanche forecast to make a predetermination of where they think it's going to be good to go. Whereas our type E user is able to extend that forecast information into their environment and iteratively update based on what they're seeing. And so this user type, they describe their observations as showing them where they can go, and the bulletin or the forecast information being more of a starting point for their analysis in the field. And so that was really what emerged in this study, was these five types of forecast users.
So that's sort of the actual results then.
Yeah.
A little bit, huh?
Yeah.
And then what did you, I think part of the question is how to improve things.
Yes.
And so first of all, what does improvement mean? Like people becoming a D? Or is that your idea of improvement? Or yeah.
Yeah, great question. This was probably what really motivated moving into a PhD with this research. I think, yeah, the study was so interesting, and we were able to identify that, yeah, context matters for people. There's a full range of folks getting out there. And Mary mentioned this earlier. They have busy lives. There's a lot that they're doing. Clearing their head in the backcountry can be a thrilling and beautiful or peaceful experience. And we want to facilitate that for the diversity of our audiences, but we really have to understand where they're coming from and what context they're operating in. So I think it was a big accomplishment of this research to start to give ourselves some foundations and ways to identify different contexts that audiences are coming to us from. And then this question of, okay, what do we do with it, is exactly where I ended in doing the master's research. And that's kind of the leading research question for my PhD, is then, okay, how do we make improvements once we start to see who our audience is?
Any teasers?
Teasers. Yeah, I think right now what's been really interesting is I keep going back to this word of context, because that's where I'm spending a lot of my time, is really understanding the distinct challenges we have in public avalanche safety. Some of them have already been mentioned in our conversation today, is that Wendy was talking about just how much uncertainty there can be and how we communicate that uncertainty, and giving something a bright color and like this determination of hazard can kind of communicate an uncertainty that we may or may not feel that we have. So one of the things that we work really hard in forecasting is to provide accurate information, and that can be so, so difficult with spatial variability. The conditions can change from one slope to another, and that's something that is really distinct for our context. They can also change rapidly over time, within the hour. And the other aspects to them are sometimes the conditions are not very obvious. This is not like a wildfire burning or the earth shaking. There can be really consequential hazards out there that might not clue you in. And finally, the exposure is not something that we can control. We're not closing the backcountry to access based on whether you can get yourself in trouble or not out there. So we're really limited in how we can support people. And largely that, I think, is what Mary gave the term the art of the peace of our context, is finding the ways that are going to resonate in how we can support people. And so really trying to define all those specifics and detail the complexity of the context that we're working in, and then use all those distinctions to derive from the research that is out there on how we should then be approaching design and evaluation for those specifics, is how I'm approaching it at this time. And I guess the bigger picture philosophy or thinking behind that is kind of the right tool for the job, is trying to fit what we're doing into the contexts that exist and all of the uncertainties that exist within that as well.
Yeah, provided information to let people make good decisions. This is Alaska Public Media. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tarlock. We're talking about what's new in avalanche forecasting in South Central. I don't know who Mary or Wendy or I think about you two, but either Wendy or the other two also. But maybe Mary, you probably run into a lot of people, eh?
Yeah, there is. I think it's just been such a big need for a while because the Front Range is behind Anchorage, which is a huge population base. I do run into a fair amount of people and crowded trailheads and all that stuff.
Yeah, so I'm sort of connecting this with what Ann is saying. When you are running and talking to people, are they A's, B's, C's, and D's? Are they like who are we seeing out there, the forecasters, and how are they using these forecasts?
Oh, that's such a good question. It's pretty eclectic. Like sometimes you get hunters, like South Fork of Eagle River. I've ran into moose hunters there. And then Glen Alps, you get a lot of hikers. And I think, there's a particular face on Flat Top that slides fairly often, and gets a lot of hiker travel. And I think hikers might not be in the same mindset of, oh, I have my beacon shovel probe in my backpack and I'm in consequential terrain. It might have a different mindset when someone's going out for a hike and not really totally know that they're in avalanche terrain. And then we do get backcountry skiers, motorized community. Pretty eclectic because it's right out a lot of people's back door. It's a 20 or 30 minute drive, and you can be in pretty consequential terrain quickly.
And I guess thanks, Mary. And in general, for anybody, how do you hope people use these forecasts? What's your dream user?
Well, I guess I'll jump in. It's Wendy. And I'm so excited that you decided to pursue your question you got from your master's to your PhD. We're ready to change our products when you tell us what we should change them to. Maybe we won't have colors anymore in the future. Who knows? It is a really new, this whole thing is quite new in the big scheme of things, the whole avalanche science and communicating it to the public. So I'm really excited about Anne's work, and everybody is using it in the world. She's doing some cutting edge things. And I guess that was one question I had for Anne is who else is working on this stuff? I know there are other folks. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for asking, because I meant to mention that we do have a research website, which is avalancheresearch.ca. And so since I did this initial study for my master's looking at how the forecast has been used, there's been so many other researchers that have built onto this initial effort and added dimensions to it. So colleagues of mine like Henry Finn and Abby Morgan and Katie Fisher and Rosie Langford and Annalise Newedek, and all of their research is also there as well. So our research program is a full team of folks working together on these type of questions. And yeah, it's just been incredible how it's really kind of galvanized the avalanche community, and there's so many more folks and researchers and practitioners that are interested and coming along and joining forces in a way. So, yeah, it's a really exciting time and area of study.
Mm-hmm. And that brings up another question, Ann. This is a communicating risk. So I imagine it's multidisciplinary. You're bringing stuff in from all other fields. Like, what other kind of fields do you bring into this kind of study?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. That's fantastic. So that's where I kind of started when I did this first study, was looking in the field of risk communication, which really served me well. But now as we broaden out to think about, okay, what do we do about it? I've been bringing in different disciplines, as you mentioned, like public health is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at how for backcountry recreation, this really is a free choice environment. We're not ordering people what to do. It really, our objective is for this to resonate and to serve them well in their context. And so Public health has been a big one. Other natural hazard risk governance frameworks for things like tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes. And also the complexity of policy and design decision making.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Wendy, we have a couple of minutes left. When you're thinking about the future of the of communicating this, what's on the radar besides waiting for PhD to be published?
Well, we love it when people send us notes and feedback of things that work or don't work in our avalanche forecasts and now the weekend avalanche outlooks. But I just realized you asked me a question before, too. I didn't quite answer it. Is we really people don't read quite as much anymore, mm-hmm. is what the science tells us. And Anne could say if that is right or wrong. And so we have more graphics in our forecasts. That's why we have these avalanche problem graphics and things. But at the end of the day, the avalanche forecast and the avalanche outlook looks at a whole range. And something I wanted to make sure people understand is that when you walk out there on top of a ridge and you're going to ski a slope, or you ride out there to the bottom of a slope and you want to hill climb up to the ridge on your snow machine, that is what we call a slope scale assessment. And the avalanche forecast gives you tools to make that slope scale assessment, but that is you are the avalanche forecaster on that slope, and the avalanche forecast is for a whole range. And we heard from Daniel, things can be quite different from one place to the other, or Anne said it too, one ridge to the other, it can be different. And so there is a lot of uncertainty in our forecasts, even though we make them as accurate as we possibly can. But that was one thing I wanted to put out there.
I really like the idea of everybody being an avalanche forecaster. It's something that struck me that you're always an avalanche forecaster, no matter who you are, where you're going. If you're up in the mountains on snow, you should be an avalanche forecaster.
Yeah, it's a good mindset to have, I think, for all of us.
And any other thoughts from down south from Mick and Daniel? What are you looking forward to this winter? And Mary, for instance, and where are you looking forward to the rest of the season and your jobs?
This is Mick, and I am really looking forward to the outreach. We've just started planning some of the events we're gonna do, and talking with the local emergency services folks and getting together with them, doing a forecaster chat and Seward and Soldotna. I want to just get out and talk to people and get some of this feedback from them and just share what we're talking about on this show with people face to face. Looking forward to that.
That's great. Well, we're about out of time. So I want to again thank my guest, Wendy Wagner, with the Two Guys Avalanche Center. Mary Giamonte, who's also with the Avalanche Center, and forecasts on the Front Range, Mitt Phelps, and Daniel Kruger, who are forecasting down in the Seward District, and Anne St. Clair, who's a researcher and a faculty professor at AEPU. Thank you all very much for joining the show today. A big thanks to our producer, Airport. This is your host, Paul Tortop, and from all the hosts at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening. Have many fun and safe winter adventures, and we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.